Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News and regular participant Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken. We always love it when you're here.
It's good to be back.
You get it? We always love it when you're here. Okay, so let's begin with the people of the year. And I think most of us would agree that the person of the year in New York state politics is Preet Bharara, right?
Absolutely. You know, last year, around this time when I was writing a preview for the legislative session, I quoted a political observer, Steve Greenberg, as saying that there's going to be two words that hover over the Capitol for the legislative session and over everything they do, and that is Preet Bharara. And that turned out to be very prophetic. And I think as we head into 2016, I think you're going to see Preet too.
Now, Preet Bharara is, to put it mildly, enigmatic. In other words, we don't know what he's going to do. But not a lot of people thought that he would indict the two most powerful people in the New York State Legislature. We all know that a buzz in Albany is this thing. We don't talk about it much, but is the idea, could or would Andrew Cuomo or his subordinates be indicted for their work on the Moreland Act Commission? We just don't know, do we?
No, we're going right into that, huh?
Yeah.
No, we really don't know. I think, you know, we know that he's been looking at that. I got to think a year and a half later that maybe he didn't find anything yet or he would have brought something. However, he's not just looking at the Moreland and the governor's interference with it and his aide's interference with it and the decision to pull the plug abruptly on it. But now he's also looking at the Buffalo Billions, which is the governor's signature upstate economic development program. And he's looking to see if there was potential bid rigging. So we know he's looking into serious things. We don't know if he's finding anything.
Can you indict a governor as easily as you indict a political leader in the legislature?
I think if Preet Bharara could, he would. You know, and I don't know the political pressure he might be facing from above him on something like that. But certainly he's been given ample opportunity, including a recent interview on New York City public radio where he was asked, are you still looking into the governor? And he would not throw him a lifeline. He just said, I'm not going to comment on what we're looking into. And, you know, right there, he could have said no and put it all to rest. But as long as he refuses to rule that out, there's going to be this cloud hanging over the governor heading into 2016.
Now, my impression of the governor is that he's cleaning up his act. This is Andrew 2. This is not Andrew 1. Andrew 1 was, that guy is a bad guy. I'm going to get him. You know, Mayor de Blasio, you know, incredible fighting and infighting. And all of a sudden, it's almost as if the governor has a checklist. Let's see. The teachers hate me. Let's take care of the teachers. Let's change Common Core and holding them responsible. And all of those forays which he involved himself in seem to be mitigated now by the newer, nicer Andrew.
It really is a major difference of what we've seen from term one and term two. Basically, in term one, if you publicly went after the governor, he crushed you. And we saw that with the teachers' unions. They didn't endorse him. They were fighting with him. And he basically called them the last remaining public monopoly. He said he was going to break, basically without saying it, he said he was going to break them. And now we see the best way to probably get him to move the other way is to criticize him publicly and give him sustained pressure. The governor recognized that his relationship with the left wing of the Democratic Party, the base of the party, needed major, major repairs. They don't trust him. They still don't trust him, even with all the stuff he's been doing the last 6 months. But he has reached out and he is trying to make amends. Now, the question then becomes why? Is he running for re-election in 2018? Is he looking at 2020 for the presidential race? And you can't run nationally with the unions hating your guts. So, you know, we don't know. You know, he says he's going to run for re-election. If you would have asked me 6 months ago, I would have said, I don't think he's running. Now I'm more inclined to think he is because of some of the things he's doing.
I think he is because he doesn't have any other place to go.
And this is what he does. You know, the one thing is we've seen all these legislative leaders go down. You know, Dean Skelos was helping his son, enriching his son. You know, Sheldon Silver was pocketing $4 million. The governor is not motivated by personal wealth in the same way that we've seen some other lawmakers. Governor's motivated by power. And so he likes the game and he likes being involved. And so the question is, would he be happy, you know, retiring from politics and then going into something else? Now, if he was planning to run in 2020, if the Republicans win in 2016, this coming year, and if he was thinking, well, you know what, maybe I am really going to make a serious effort to run, then I could see him announcing he's not going to seek reelection. He then spends 2 years when his term is up in 2018 running for president. But either way, the stuff he's doing is allowing him to keep all his options open.
Well, I think you're right. And let's go to the two you just mentioned, Speaker Silver and Dean Skelos. How powerful were their convictions in terms of the body politic, the rest of that body politic?
It really is probably the most stunning thing in my time here. I mean, maybe Eliot Spitzer going down in terms of resigning under, you know, scandal, that probably tops anything, a governor resigning in disgrace like that. But beyond that, I mean, you know, if we would have sat here a year ago this time, would we have been discussing that not just one, but both legislative leaders would not only have been charged, lost their titles, but then convicted all in the same year and within weeks of each other, the convictions? It sent shockwaves. I think people are scared. I think people feel that certainly the line of what they were used to has been moved and that Preparara is going after things that they thought were either legal or maybe a little ethical squishy, you know, but not necessarily illegal. And now they are. Whether that is enough to make them do major ethics reform themselves, I don't know. Probably not major. However, it may clean up their behavior a little bit. So, you know, Preparara may indeed get ethics reform, even if it's not formally done. Already, we've seen that John Flanagan, the new Senate Majority Leader, right before he took over the leadership position, he gave up his outside income. Jeff Klein, the head of the Senate Independence Conference, he gave up his outside income. Carl Hastie doesn't have outside income. Andrea Stewart-Cousins, the Senate Democratic Minority Leader, doesn't have outside income. So this is the first time in a long time, and first time that I could ever remember in my 2 decades here, that you don't have legislative leaders with any outside income.
That we know of.
That we know of, exactly. But that is a direct result, I believe, of Preparara.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. However, I'm wondering about the way in which all of this works. We see on Long Island that Dean Skelos is now convicted. That means the governor has to call a special election for his seat, which will probably come on the same day as the presidential primary in New York. And the same thing will occur within Sheldon Silver's district. I'm going to bet you that Sheldon Silver's replacement is a Democrat. But I'm not so sure that Dean Skelos on Long Island is going to be replaced by a Republican.
Well, and one of the people they're looking at, I agree with you, and one of the people the Democrats are looking at is a guy named Todd Kominsky, who, besides being Mel Brooks's great nephew.
I had no idea.
Yeah, he's his great nephew.
I've read great things about Kominsky, but this is a topic.
But besides that, he also has a little background of being a former assistant U.S. attorney who helped bring cases against Pedro Espada and some other corruption cases. So if you're running for a seat that became vacant because the guy before you was convicted on 8 federal counts, felony counts, then that's not a bad credential to have. However, I will say this. The fact that the governor is doing it on the presidential primary, any type of special election, that actually could help the Republicans for that seat, at least for the time being, because you got to figure by then, a lot of people think by April 19th, Hillary Clinton will probably have the nomination sewn up on the Democratic side.
Right.
You know, it may not happen, but that's the assumption. But we're still going to have this battle on the Republican side, which means a lot more Republicans could turn out on primary day than Democrats, and that could help in that race.
Say that again. In other words, how does that work?
Because if more Republicans are coming out because they want to vote for Trump or they want to vote for whoever they're going to vote for,
a spirited debate,
that's still going to be on. It may not be settled, and it probably won't be settled by the New York primary. So that would draw out more interest from the Republicans, which may then, you know, trickle down into a benefit for the Republican Senate.
That's a very interesting point. On the other hand, Hillary is Hillary, and she might be the first female president of the United States. And there might be a show of support for the fact that she's there. And also, we don't know whether Bernie Sanders versus Hillary in New York, which has a lot of progressives in it, might lead people to come out and vote.
It could. But I'm sure if I'm the Republicans, the date I want is April 19th. because it doesn't guarantee you're going to win the seat, but it does give you a better chance that you might otherwise have, especially given what's gone on down in Nassau County.
Ken Levitt, I love having you on the show, and I'll tell you why. Because you always open up avenues of investigation that are fabulous. So if what you're saying is it benefits the Republicans to have the special election on the day of the national primaries, and we all have long suspected Andrew Cuomo of wanting the Republicans to maintain control of the Senate, ipso facto, he may be in fact doing exactly what he's always been doing, which is trying to play the odds so that a Republican gets in.
Certainly could make that argument. Yeah, I've heard that argument made. Now, to be fair to the governor, you know, it costs a lot of money to put on these special elections. I think it's $30 million per election. And so to do it when you already have the voting machines out and to do all that kind of stuff may make more sense, but that certainly could be a side benefit, you know, that it would give better odds, not guaranteed, but better odds to the Republicans in that race.
But Ken Levitt, it would be consistent with his saying, I'm a Democrat, I'm for Democrats, and helping the Republicans.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be interesting. It really is going to be interesting to see what kind of political capital, if any, he puts out. You know, I think he's been reaching out so much to the left wing of the party that if he overtly then tries to do the, you know, the machinations that he's done in the past to help the Republicans, you know, he's going to be right back where he started. And not only that, he's going to just really cement what a lot of people on the left think, which is they don't trust him. And so, yeah, you do all these things because you're trying to get your political numbers up, your poll numbers up. But when push comes to shove, what are you doing to help elect a Senate Democratic conference? That would raise those questions. So we're going to really see as the year goes on, does he raise money for the Senate Democrats? Does he appear for the Senate Democrats? Not all over, because there are a lot of districts he's not popular, particularly upstate. But he certainly could help raise money. He could direct money. He can make appearances on Long Island. Long Island's going to be a huge battleground. You know, not just the Skelos seat, but the Carl Marcellino seat and Kemp Hannon's seat and maybe Jack Martin's.
And in fact, the Democrats are already showing Dean Skelos shaking hands with all of those guys, trying to let the stench go from one to the other.
Yeah, and I've reported this week that the Nassau County Democrats have already, on Christmas week, they have an ad up and running on the radio, basically tying these four, Michael Venditto and Hannon and a couple of the others I mentioned, Marcellino and Martins, tying them to Skelos, and also pointing out that when Skelos was first charged, these guys signed a loyalty pledge, basically. They put out a statement saying, we back him 100%. So they're going to go after him. And that is an area, Nassau County, where the governor, if he really was invested in the Senate Democrats, could do some good because his numbers are still, he's still very popular on Long Island.
That's true.
And so if there is one area that's a key battleground area for the Senate Dems to take on the Republicans, and there's one area where the governor could go in there without fear that, you know, he's a liability, it's Long Island. And so that's going to be a tell.
Well, of course, we've been following this thread for a long time. You know, to me, you have to watch what he does as opposed to what he says.
Absolutely.
Now, his arch enemy, de Blasio, has now made it plain, according to your reportage and others, that he is going after the Senate. And he wants, and now he got really bloodied the last time because he lost. The Republicans won the Senate, but he tried to help the Democrats as opposed to Andrew, who everybody thought was trying to help the Republicans, even though he was a Democrat. So now this time he's already announcing he's going to help.
Well, yes and no. He has said he is not going to be as active this time. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see de Blasio much more behind the scenes. It won't be as in your face. I think he realizes he cannot, especially coming into the legislative year when he needs stuff, you know, mayoral control over the schools, that law is up. There's, you know, funding issues, homeless funding issues. All these things are going to come up that he needs. And so the other day he held a press conference and he was asked about it. And he says, you know, he backs a Senate Democrat, but he's not going to, I don't think you're going to see him lend out his political team like he did the last time. I don't think he'll overtly look to try and, you know, fundraise in the way he did the last time. I think he'll be active behind the scenes because he desperately wants a Democratic conference in the Senate. But I think he recognizes going into the new year that he does have to work with the Republicans if he wants to get stuff done.
You think the Republicans will ever forgive him for the last time?
No.
Exactly.
No, I mean, they'll give him what they have to give him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they're also, they need to get reelected. So they'll, you know, they've got two members down there, so they can't freeze him out entirely. And they'll give him what he needs or what they feel the city needs, but they are going to do him no favors. You know, issues like mayoral control, even if it's another one-year extension, they'll do something. They won't let it lapse. But what they won't do are a lot of the second-tier issues. You know, they gave him in his first year a great expansion on red light cameras, and they gave him other issues. Those are the kind of issues where they'll say, yeah, go pound salt.
You know, incumbents almost never lose. That's a general law, one of the commandments of politics in New York State. Incumbents don't lose. So now you mentioned four targets for the Democrats on Long Island, but the chances of them actually losing, it seems to me, no matter what the Democrats do, no matter how they try to associate him with Dean Skelos, aren't that good.
Yeah, it's tough, but we don't know what's going to be going on. We do know that there's a U.S. attorney, not Barrera, but the Eastern District out of Brooklyn. There's an investigation into the county executive, Ed Mangano, his deputy, and a lot of, you know, we know that not Michael Vendetto, his father, John Vendetto, I think is his first name, the longtime Oyster Bay town supervisor, who always won with almost like 70% of the vote. The guy's been there for 30 years or so. He almost lost this year. He won by 66 votes, and that was after the paper ballots were counted, because his administration has been embroiled in scandal. We also know that the Republicans put up a party person for a district attorney down in Nassau County. Now, granted, it was an open seat. You had an acting DA in Madeline Singas, the Democrat, but she won, and she wasn't expected to win.
Mm.
So the corruption stuff is starting to at least get people's attention in areas where they're directly related.
Yes, but Ken Lovett, what about the other side? What about the silver side? Is there any evidence like that, that Democratic politics have been so affected because their leader got indicted and convicted?
Well, there is no doubt the Republicans, and they've made it clear, the Republicans are going to try and muddy that issue by saying, this is a bipartisan issue, the corruption. Not just Shelley Silver, but you saw a number of Senate Democrat leaders go down. John Sampson, the former Senate Democratic leader, was sentenced to prison or was convicted. Malcolm Smith, the former Senate president and majority leader, is serving 7 years in prison. So they're saying this isn't a Republican issue, but it's going to be a big fight. That's going to be a huge issue down there, along with the local issues that obviously usually decide a race.
Well, let me just ask you this last question on this thread. Is it just possible that New York, which has been going increasingly blue over the years in terms of the number of voters, forget about the fact that the Republicans are allowed to draw their own districts to keep themselves in office in the Senate. But is it possible that we are now seeing the crossover to a blue, a really blue state with blue institutions?
Well, what I think you, if I had to make a prediction, and I guess this is the time of year to do that.
Sure.
And I'm sure you'll play it back if I'm wrong.
Well, I do it too.
No, but if I had to make a prediction, I think the Senate Democrats, because it's a presidential year, which typically will bring out more Democrats, I think they have a good shot because they only have to pick up one or two seats to at least be in the running to strike a deal with the breakaway group, the independent Democrats. There's five Democrats who have been really aligned with the Republicans. They call themselves the Independent Democratic Conference, led by Jeff Klein out of the Bronx.
Yeah.
But if
I call them the traitors.
And if the Senate Dems can pick up one or two seats, then they're in a position to strike a deal, a similar coalition with those five Democrats. And that would give them the power. I've talked to a lot of people who expect that over the next couple of years, because it is so tight, right now, the Republicans, you need 32 people to have a majority. It's a 63-seat House. Right now, the Republicans have 31, but they also have a Democrat from Brooklyn named Simcha Felder who's been caucusing with them. So basically, they have the barest of bare majorities. And I think what you might see...
Well, but
see,
that doesn't count those four traitors, does it?
The five.
The five
no,
traitors.
That doesn't count. So what I think you're going to see is you might see a pendulum where in presidential years, because it's so close, it could swing to the Democrats. And then in the off years, which favor the Republicans, it could swing back. So
which
for the next few years, you might see just this, you know, bouncing back and forth between who controls the Senate.
Right. I think that's true. So I guess I want to come back to somebody who we talked about a lot in the old days, but we haven't talked about lately. That is William Rapfogel. Will you remind everybody who he is?
William Rapfogel, who happens to be the husband of Judy Rapfogel, who was the longtime chief of staff to Sheldon Silver, the powerful now former Assembly Speaker. He also was a powerful guy in his own right. He headed up a really prominent charity down in the city, the Metropolitan Council on Jewish Poverty. And he was convicted in 2013 of basically he was involved in a kickback scheme in which he was he received, you know, millions of dollars as part of his plan. I think it was $9 million overall. He got three of it.
And some of it ended up under his bed in his apartment.
And some of it ended up in his bed and in closets and his Catskill house apartment.
And his wife, who is the chief of staff to Silver and one of their best friends, said she knew nothing about what was under the bed.
Right. And so he was sentenced in 2014. He was sentenced to 3 1/3 to 10 years in prison. Lo and behold, after 14 months, he's transferred from the medium security prison where he was to a minimum security work release prison in Manhattan. So he got a job at a real estate development firm or something, and he was able to come out and start working. This was a couple weeks ago. On top of that, we recently learned that he has been granted furloughs. He's Orthodox Jewish. He can now go home on Friday nights for the Jewish Sabbath, and he doesn't have to go back to the prison until Saturday night.
Sounds like a convenient insider's game to some degree.
A lot of people have raised that issue.
Right. So, you know, this is fascinating because he went to jail willingly. What I mean by that is he pled.
Yeah.
He did not face a trial. If he had faced the trial, well, then who knows whether Silver would have been called in and what would have happened. So he just went easily, and now he's out easily.
Yeah, and you know, look, the reality is, now nobody wants to be in prison, but he's in a minimum security work release prison, which means there are no bars, you know, it's dormitory style. He's working, he's allowed out, I think it's 12, 14 hours a day, you know, to work and go to synagogue. And so he, you know, and now on top of that, he gets to go home for a 25, 6-hour period every week and sleep in his own bed and see his family. And this is after only 14 months of a 3 1/3 to 10-year sentence. He's not eligible for parole until 2017.
As compared with a kid who walks in with a toy gun to a bodega and goes to jail for a long, long time.
Yeah, and you know, of course, DOCS, the Department of Corrections says, oh, you know, there's no favoritism here. You know, it's based on your record. It's based on your job and what you're doing. And that he applied for work release. He was granted work release. And this is part of this is something that comes with it as long as you earn it. And they say he earned it. He earned it quickly, but he earned it, they say.
There are those people who think the whole thing stinks like fish.
There are a lot of people who say it stinks like fish. I agree.
So, Ken Lovett, as the year ends, are you looking forward to a more interesting year next year, or do you think things are going to close down?
I don't think it's over quite yet. You know, I mean, barring what happens with the governor, let's assume nothing happens, just for the sake of argument.
Yeah, my assumption.
So nothing happens with the governor. I still think that we know.
When you say nothing, you mean just for the people who are just tuning in.
Indictments.
There's no indictment, anything like that.
Right.
No,
for him or his staff or former staff. If that's the case, we do know that Preparara is still investigating other people. We know that he's investigating Marty Golden out of Brooklyn, a senator. We know that he was investigating some now former senators who stepped down amid those investigations. So I still think we're going to see certain things happen. It may not be as spectacular as seeing the two legislative leaders go down in the same year, but I don't think it's over. You know, as the U.S. attorney likes to say, stay tuned.
Stay tuned. The two most fearful, important words in Albany. Our guest has been columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken Lovett, we think you're the best. Thanks so much for joining us. We always read you in the Daily News, and we will continue to do that.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.